All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're going to dive deep on two players on the roster. We're going to talk a lot about Grady Jarrett, as well as beginning our breakdown of the Falcons undrafted class from 2018 with Hurt Banker, the quarterback.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, guys, so we're going to talk a lot about Grady Jarrett today in sort of a reaction to some of the quotes from Dan Quinn the other day dealing with the team's OTAs. And, you know, Jarrett is a player that a lot of people are excited about. I'll share my thoughts on sort of my optimism or cautious optimism when it comes to what type of season that Grady Jarrett will have in 2018 on today's episode, as well as talk about Kurt Bankert, potential to make the roster, the undrafted quarterback. Last year, we did like a two-part episode on this podcast where we devoted like one entire episode to undrafted free agents on either side of the ball, offense and defense per episode. And we're going to try to do that again this year, but it'll probably wind up being more than two parts. It'll probably wind up being three or four parts. And, you know, maybe even five parts if you include this episode. And just because Kurt Bankert is sort of like the big fish in terms of the Falcons undrafted free agent class, the guy that probably will be the most interesting player to see if he makes the roster. Well, I think other guys may have a higher mathematical chance. But just because, you know, certain things around him, you know, there's been a suggestion that he would have been the team's seventh round pick if they had one. So I think with Banker, you know, he deserves quite a bit of conversation because he's been the one guy that we've talked about. And so I'll get to Banker later in the show. And first, I do want to talk about Grady Jarrett and sort of talk about my excitement level for him and what his season could be. He's a guy that's been getting quite a bit of hype this offseason. I think somewhat deservedly so. You know me, I'm a little bit iffy when it comes to hype. And sometimes I'm like, Nah, but at, you know, I think Grady Jarrett, there's a lot of reasons for people to be hopeful about what type of season he could have, because I think the interesting thing to me with Grady Jarrett is I think there's still a lot of untapped potential with him, or at least some untapped potential with him, not a lot, because I don't think I am as quick to crown Grady Jarrett as like, oh, he's one of the truly best D tackles in the league. Like, he's definitely one of the best if we're talking like the top 12 or so guys, but in terms of like he's one of the five best, nah, I'd pump the brakes a little bit on that. But I think he certainly has the capability to get in that conversation of being in the top five with guys like Sue, with guys like Aaron Donald, with guys like Fletcher Cox, among several others. You know, maybe you throw Jarrell Casey in that mix, Geno Atkins as well. Some of those guys that are at that peak of the position, and I think Grady Jarrett is a notch, maybe a notch and a half below those guys, certainly in the top 12, maybe in the top 10. But I think there's a delineation between those guys, those elite guys. You know, Aaron Donald's probably on the level all by himself, but then the next group, which is probably Cox and Sue, and then the group after that. And, you know, maybe Jarrett's on a tier or so below that. And I think one of the interesting things with Jarrett is going to be to see if he gets there. And I think we'll see. I think there's a certain thing that he could do where he could become, reach that level where he's on that level with Cox and Sue and those guys that I don't think we've quite seen from him, or at least I haven't quite seen from him. And it's just like a couple of games last year, particularly during the second half of the season, that I was expecting Grady Jarrett to really dominate. Because I think when you look at Grady Jarrett's season last year, I think a lot of his success came really in that middle portion of the year where the Falcons were struggling offensively and like the defense wasn't quite to the level it was at the end of the year, but like he consistently stood out in those games. And so it not to say it made him look better than what it did, but it made him look better than what he was, just because like he was the one sort of standout player on a consistent basis week to week, you know, him and Keanu Neal, if I say so myself. But primarily Grady Jarrett on that defense, because the other players hadn't quite caught up. You didn't see Deion Jones take that step that he took at the end of the year. You didn't see Campbell's play improve a little bit at the end of the year. You know, Alford and Trufant were doing their thing, but, you know, Alford and Trufant at least as far as perceptions around them, tend to not be very fair assessments of how well they're playing at a given time. So I think, you know, because of Grady Jarrett playing outstanding, and the assumption from a lot of people was, oh, well, the defense was playing great and Grady Jarrett's the best player in the defense. So he, you know, that continued into the second half of the season, or deep into the second half of the season. And all this preamble to say, I think there was a little bit of a plateau with Grady Jarrett's play down the stretch. Like, he was still good, but I don't think he was as good as he was earlier in the season. And a couple of games really stood out to me, like that first Bucs game, that Vikings game, where those were two games where I really expected Jarrett to dominate those games. And I thought, really, if the particularly in the Vikings game, if the Falcons were going to have any shot at winning that game, one of the few matchups that I think the Falcons have over the Vikings, and one of the reasons why the Falcons have struggled so much against the Vikings the last four or so years, since Mike Zimmer took over, is because there's very few matchups that they win. And when they get advantageous matchups, they don't really take advantage of them to the degree that they need to win those games. And I thought one of the few matchups that was really sort of potentially stacked in the Falcons' favor was the Falcons' interior defensive line versus that Vikings' interior offensive line, with Poe and Jarrett going up against guys like Nick Easton and Pat Elflein and whoever the heck the Vikings had at right guard. Last year, was it Alex Boone or whatever, whoever it was. And so I thought that was a matchup that the Falcons could really exploit and needed to exploit if they were going to have a real shot at winning that game. And that Bucs game, I remember, because, you know, everybody's favorite, especially my favorite, J.R. Sweezy, you know, and people make fun of J.R. Sweezy. Like, J.R. Sweezy's not good, but he's not as terrible as people make him out to be. And, like, that game really sort of showed it to you, because I think when you saw the individual times where it was Grady Jarrett versus J.R. Sweezy, not to say that J.R. Sweezy shut down Grady Jarrett, but he didn't really break too much of a sweat keeping Grady Jarrett in check. And most of the positive plays that Jarrett had in that game were instances where he was going up against Kevin Pamphile. I have no idea how to say that dude's name. He's been in Tampa Bay for, like, 3 years. You know, that was one of the, that was a little disappointing to me, for lack of a better term. And I think, you know, that's what sort of separates, where I, in my perception, Grady Jarrett from some of those elite D tackles, where average starters like that against the Bucs and Vikings, like, you know, you want to see, like, Aaron Donald's going to kill those guys. And I know Aaron Donald's on a different level, but we saw that with Fletcher Cox, whether it was, whether it was Lavitre, whether it was Schweitzer, or not Lavitre, Garland or Schweitzer, it didn't matter. He was going to win those matchups, even against Alex Mack. We see that time and time again when our guards go up against other top D tackles. And I just want to see that more consistently and to a slightly higher level with Grady Jarrett. And that's basically what I'm saying. Like, I want it to be like, oh man, when next year when he plays, you know, I can't even think of some mediocre guards that we're going to face on the schedule this year. Just pick a team from some division and you'll find some. But, you know, he's just going to absolutely destroy these guys. And even when he faces the good guards like the David DeCastros and the Zach Martins of the world, like, I want people to say, you know, like, oh, those guys had Pro Bowl seasons. But if you go back and you look at their seasons, oh, their worst game came against the Falcons because they had to face Grady Jarrett. That's what the sort of thing, and I don't know if Grady Jarrett's at that level yet, and I hope this is the year that he gets there, because I do think that will be hugely beneficial to the Falcons' defense, and particularly the pass rush, particularly guys like Tack and Vic, who, you know, I think people are iffy on Vic for various reasons that we've discussed ad nauseum on this podcast over the last 6 months. I think there seems to be overwhelming in optimism about Tack's 2018 season. I'm a little bit more cautious about that, just because Tack is a young player and I don't assume that he's going to make these huge leaps in year two that, you know, people think he's poised to. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I'm just a little bit more cautiously optimistic about those two guys really making that big jump. But I think if, you know, for me at least, the guy that I'm going to put most of my confidence in, because I think, because of the way that Grady Jarrett plays, he's less of a hot cold player. He's a much more consistent player week to week. And I think Tack and Vic, to a certain extent, really sort of depend on the matchups that they're facing on a week to week basis, or whether or not they're going to really show up, just because they're not for various reasons, not as refined or developed or whatever the case may be. Again, that's a podcast for another day. We're talking about Grady Jarrett here. But I do think if Grady Jarrett does take that leap this year, with him being able to provide that interior push, it's going to make the job for guys like Tack and Vic a lot easier this year, because when they use their speed rush, which predominantly is how they get their sacks, like Vic gets sacks either on a speed rush or a twist. And most of, I think like Tack had like 6 or 7 sacks last year, and I think like 4 or 5 of them came on speed rushes. The vast majority of them came on speed rushes. And so when the quarterback doesn't have room to step up in the pocket because that interior push is there, you know, it allows those speed guys on the outside that they don't, you know, they can't just get pushed wide of the pocket and the quarterback just has a clean pocket to step up into. And that's been a little bit problematic for the Falcons the last couple of years, simply because while Jarrett and Poe and Claiborne are good interior pass rushers, they're not those sort of dominant interior pass rushers that are going to consistently get that pressure up the middle. And that's where I sort of want to see Grady Jarrett take that next leap. And I think he can. You know, we talked about this quite a bit last month when we were talking a lot about the Terrell McClain signing in the middle of May. And it sounds like, you know, I think I said then, like, Grady Jarrett's probably going to open the season as the base 3 technique in the base package. But it does sound like from what we've heard since then, or at least what I've heard since then, or at least in my the world that I live in, the reality that I live in, it sounds a little bit more like the Falcons, or if that's going to be the plan, then Grady Jarrett's just going to be keeping the seat warm until Deidre Sanat's ready. And, you know, as a rookie, the assumption that he'll be ready week 1 is that's a little iffy. But week 6, you know, he could be ready to go, ready to crack some skulls and whatnot. And so I think that's – and if that's the case, and Grady Jarrett is then relegated to being, quote-unquote, just a sub-package player, I think that will be very beneficial to him, because it will allow him to really blossom as a pass – potential to blossom as a pass rusher and really help the Falcons pass rush in a lot of ways. So I think, you know, my hope is, I guess, to sum it all up, is my hope is, you know, there's going to be – every game with Grady Jarrett, there's going to be like 2 or 3 plays – where he's just going to be unblockable. He's just going to wreck whatever the offense is trying to do. And I think to make that leap up to that next tier of guys where you can legitimately put him in the conversation as one of the, you know, the best non-Aaron Donald D tackle in the league is basically, I guess, the category, or the best non-Aaron Donald Fletcher Cox D tackle in the league, because you can argue that Fletcher Cox is not consistently at that level either. Geno Atkins has sort of held that space previously. But I digress. If you're going to put him in that, like, that number needs to go from 2 to 3 to like 5 or 7. I think that's the difference between those guys and where Grady Jarrett is now. And I want to see a little bit more consistently, particularly against the lesser competition when he's not facing a Pro Bowl caliber guard. And I do want to see him, you know, embarrass those Pro Bowlers from a little bit from time to time as well. So that's to me where, like, basically what I want to see him do is do to Wes Schweitzer what Akiem Hicks did to him. And I want to see that, you know, obviously I'm not going to be able to get that every week, but I definitely want to see that like 3 or 4 times memorably over the course of a season where it's like, whoa, he absolutely destroyed another human being. And that person has to go into witness protection now. That's what I want to see. And I think he can get there. I think he definitely has the talent and ability to get there. You know, when we talk about Dan Quinn not developing talent, or the questions about Dan Quinn developing talent, I do think the one feather in Dan Quinn's hat that you can legitimately say of a player that has legitimately developed in Atlanta is Grady Jarrett. In terms of where, it's not like he's like night and day different from what he was in college, but he is definitely a more refined version of the player that he was in college. And that's ultimately what development mostly boils down to. So good on Grady Jarrett. That's all I really have to say about that. And I'm sure he'll be a player that we talk about quite a bit this season and this summer as well. So before we move on and talk more about Kurt Benkert, I do want to remind you guys to check out LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop hub of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find content dealing with the NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball. Again, that's LockedOnSports.com, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay, so let's talk about Kurt Benkert, and he's a player that's got, we've talked a number of times on this podcast in the past. If you go back and listen to the Josh Allen versus Lamar Jackson podcast I had with Mark Schofield the week of the draft, I think it was like the Tuesday before the draft, and as well as the Fan Talk episode that we just had with Andy Gallagher, I think that was last week. They all blur together, guys. And so we talked a little bit about Kurt Benkert. If you listen to that Mark Schofield episode first, I'm going to be very optimistic and positive about Kurt Benkert because I was coming off the heels of watching what I've been told were his two best performances against Miami and Boise State. And those were the only two games I saw of his. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's really good. He should be like a fourth round pick. And then since then, before we talked with Andy, who was a little bit, certainly sounded a lot higher than on Baker than I was. I don't think he ever even said anything about Baker in that podcast. And there was a reason for that, which we will discuss in a second. I watched a couple more games. I watched them against Pitt, of course. And then I can't remember the other game. It was probably Louisville, I think, or Tech, Virginia Tech. I forgot. Tech is Georgia Tech to you guys. I'm from Virginia, so Tech is Virginia Tech to me. So I think it was either Louisville or Virginia Tech. And I became a little, you know, he came back down to earth a little bit, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so I think Benkert certainly has a leg up on winning the third quarterback spot. I think, you know, if you checked out my 53-man roster prediction that I posted on LockedOnFalcons.com and FileFans.com in the last couple of weeks, I didn't have Benkert making the roster. I had him on the practice squad. And part of the reason was because, like, the more I watched him, like, the more I was like, oh, okay, like, he's good. Don't get me wrong. You know, he's like good in like a fifth, sixth round pick sort of way. But like, I don't know if he's definitely a guy that's worth developing and could be a really solid NFL backup. But I don't know if he's like a surefire, like come in day one and make you go, oh, type of guy that he's going to kind of have to need to be to make the team. Just because like, injuries happen and whatnot happens. The Falcons do have the luxury of carrying a third quarterback. I'm sorry, on their roster on offense, they do have that luxury. I've mentioned it before when we've done breakdowns of the roster and talked about sort of like a grab bag position, which was last year was supposed to be filled by Brian Hill. The year before, you could argue that Josh Perkins filled that role as the fourth tight end. And you sort of, it's basically anybody at a skill position on offense, at quarterback, running back, tight end, a wide receiver that just comes out and flat out impresses you. And you're like, well, we just got to keep this guy because there's no chance he's clearing waivers to make it to the practice squad. And that's sort of a grab bag position. And typically goes to the best, you know, skill position player. Although I guess technically it could go to like an 11th offensive lineman or something like that. If you got it like that. But that being said, I think Benkert does have a shot at making that position, but the more I saw of him, the less optimistic, I guess I would say, about him being able to do that. And I guess part of it is looking back at the guys over the last, 15, 20 years, the undrafted rookies that made the Falcons roster their first year in was, Dominique Davis in 2012, John Parker Wilson in 2009. Then I think you had to go all the way back to Doug Johnson in 2000. I could be missing a couple of guys. I'm sure some of you will definitely correct me on Twitter today as you're listening to this, tomorrow as I'm recording it. And so I may be wrong about that. But like just looking at why I thought some of those guys made the Falcons roster versus what my expectations for Benkert, and I'm not as optimistic as I was probably in late April about that potential as I am now in early June. And part of it was like you look at a guy like Davis. Like Davis, I think, primarily really was impressive because of his ability to win off structure. And his athleticism, his arm strength, and I think, you know, at that time in 2012, I think people were sort of missing the Michael Vick skill set to a certain extent and got really excited about Davis's ability to extend plays outside the pocket and do things with his legs and with chucking passes downfield that got people excited. But the problem that Davis had was, you know, subsequently, was that he didn't necessarily develop the accuracy and anticipation to necessarily think you would trust him with being the number two behind Matt Ryan, which is that's why the Falcons went out and got guys like Luke McCown and TJ Yates and drafted Sean Renfrey over the next, like, what, 2 years to sort of push Davis off the roster. But the point is, with Davis, with his ability to win off structure, it made, you know, I think one of the things I noticed with Baker was I think a lot of the plays that he really impressed with were sort of off-structure plays, but I don't know if he has that Davis level of athleticism where that's going to be something he can do reliably at the next level in the NFL. So I'm not as sure about that. As far as Wilson, like, Wilson was a game manager at Alabama, got really comfortable doing that at Alabama. And I think the difference between Wilson and Bankert was Wilson's arm talent was a lot better than what Bankert's was. I remember Andy said, like, he compared Bankert to Josh Allen. And I, you know, I was kind of like in my head, I didn't say it because, you know, it's a podcast and I'm not going to attack the guest or anything like that. I'll just talk trash on him 2 episodes later. I was a little bit perplexed by that comparison because, you know, I think Allen has world-class talent. You know, he's, as some people will term me, he's a Cam Newton type of physical, as far as his physical gifts go. I don't think Baker's that. I think, you know, arm strength to me was a big issue with Baker when I watched him. Like, there was a couple of big boy throws he would make, but then there would be a couple of throws like, does he have an NFL caliber arm? Can he make all the throws? Because he couldn't make that throw, and that's a pretty basic throw that you should be able to make if you're an NFL quarterback. And I think that's a real question mark with Baker. And that wasn't a question mark with J.P. Wilson. Obviously, J.P. Wilson, like Davis, didn't necessarily subsequently develop, but it is something, I think, to keep an eye on. And we will definitely keep an eye on that. But first, I want to plug the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, particularly a show like Locked On Hawks with host Brad Rowland, who we recently had on this podcast. Go check out Brad and his thoughts on the Hawks and the NBA. Part of Locked On Podcast Network, your NBA team every day. So I think with Banker, like, I think he's good. I don't know if he's going to be that guy that comes in and is a really high-level game manager. I think he's got a little bit gunslinger to him, which can be a good thing. Like, you can watch it. Like, I think a lot of the guys that wind up winning roster spots, particularly at the quarterback position, are guys that have that little bit of a gunslinger in them, have that a little bit of that fearlessness in them, and will just basically sling it and, you know, sling a 30-yard pass down the sideline, a go route, and hit it, and it's like all of a sudden, like, okay, you're on the practice squad or you're on the roster. I mentioned this on Twitter a couple of weeks ago when we signed Ricky Ortiz, and I said I went back and watched Ricky Ortiz in the preseason, but watching, you know, focusing on Ricky Ortiz, but one of the things that really stood out to me in those preseason games was watching Josh Woodrum, the Ravens' undrafted rookie quarterback, and in his performance in those games, and he was making some of those big boy throws. One of the reasons why I quote-unquote fell in love with Matt McGloin, the former backup to Derek Carr in Oakland, was when you go back and you watch his early preseason tape, he's making some big-time throws. There's a fearlessness level in him that you just don't typically or always consistently see in young quarterbacks. And particularly when, you know, you see a lot of fearlessness in young quarterbacks, but then they throw picks and all of a sudden they become a little less fearless, or they just don't last long enough to become less fearless. So I think Baker has a little bit of that in him, but I don't know if he has that enough in spades coupled with the physical tools that's going to make it allow him to come out and really sort of shock us in the way that some of these other guys do. But he could. Again, he could. And I think he certainly has a leg up on winning that third quarterback spot. I do think the Falcons are sort of looking to him to win that spot in the hopes that, you know, once Matt Schaub is a free agent next year, the Falcons won't be pressured to bring in a veteran, a pricey veteran quarterback to be the backup to Matt Ryan and pay $2 or $3 or more million to get that type of guy. And that's $2 or $3 million that potentially they can save to, you know, keep guys like Ricardo Allen, Tevin Coleman, or, of course, the incomparable Josh Harris, as part of their bid to, you know, retain some of their players next offseason. And if they don't have to spend $2 or $3 million of their salary cap on a backup quarterback, you know, that's going to be a real big move. But whether Bankert shows that, we'll see. I certainly think he's more than capable of playing at a high enough level to make the practice squad. Whether or not he can make the final 53 is a little bit of a question. And I think, again, what I'm getting at is I think one of the reasons for I've come to that conclusion is because watching those two games, Miami and Boise State, from what I've seen and what I've come to understand the more I've researched about Bankert, is that those were two relative outliers in his performance last year. And when you look at it like that, when it's like, oh, you know, two really good games, two really impressive games, and then 10 sort of like fine games, certainly not terrible or by any means, but just like, oh, he's a guy, he might be able to play in the league type of games. It seems more like those are outliers, and it just makes it seem like he could certainly show up to camp and be Miami Kurt Bankert, but it does seem like the odds of that happening are much lower in my eyes from a practical matter. So we'll see how it turns out. I certainly think, you know, he had from what I understand, he had a okay week at the Senior Bowl. He didn't really stand out. You know, other guys like Allen and Mayfield and Mike White were a little bit more impressive from everything I've heard. And, you know, he just didn't really stand out in a lot of ways. But then again, you know, Russell Wilson didn't really stand out at the Senior Bowl from what I recall either. And that was a big reason why he went in the third round instead of being a guy that could have snuck into the early part of the second round or the late first round, because people were like, oh, he's short and he didn't have a good Senior Bowl week, or he didn't really blow me away at the Senior Bowl. I think he still was like the best quarterback there, but, you know, and we saw what he did in his NFL career, where he's sort of a consensus top four quarterback at this point in time. Not to suggest that Bankert will be that guy, but it's one of those things where the Senior Bowl practice only matters until it doesn't matter, is I guess the point I'm trying to make. So, we'll see how it goes with Bankert, and I'm eager to see what he does. I am certainly eager, because for the first time, the Falcons actually have, you know, a third quarterback in camp that legitimately is worth paying attention to. You know, like back in the day, you know, Sean Renfrey. I like Renfrey to a certain extent, but like, I think it was clear early on in his career that I was like, he's okay. Like I guess that's probably where I'm thinking Bankert's going to fall. Is like, it's going to be more Renfrey than, you know, Doug Johnson or whatever example of like, ooh, this exciting young rookie, that's maybe this guy has a future. You know, obviously he's not, as a starter in Atlanta, that's very skeptical. You know, I know the Falcons are itching to get rid of Matt Ryan after paying him a gajillion dollars, but sarcasm, folks, for those of you that can't tell. So I'm talking in circles now at this point. So I think with Bankert, we'll see how he does. I'm certainly excited to see what he does. It gives us a reason to pay attention in third quarter, certainly on offense, because usually offensively, it's checkout time, very much checkout time. I'm usually just watching the offensive line at that point in the game, because the skill positions is like, ugh, this is bad. This is not good. Typically, that's the case. But we'll see. I think this summer might be different with Bankert in town. And Garrett Grayson, he was not a guy that impressed me very much at Colorado State. He looked good in New Orleans at times, but every quarterback that plays in Sean Payton's offense looks good. It's really amazing how, when you have a good offensive scheme, how you know how to make quarterbacks look good. I don't know. It's crazy, right? But I wouldn't necessarily. We'll see what Grayson can do. He's been in the league for a while, so it's not like it's going to be too big for him. You hope it's not, you know, 3 years into it, but we'll see. And as far as our future undrafted free agent episodes, we'll probably wind up doing. And truth be told, these are kind of more filler episodes as opposed to like, this is what we're going to do next. So I'm just basically going to record these and put them in wherever I don't have another show to do, where I don't have something else lined up. So they could be like the next four episodes, or they could be like four out of the next like 10 episodes. Who knows? But probably what we'll probably wind up doing, the next one will be running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends, offensive skill positions, Then we'll focus on those guys for a half hour. Then we'll do, 20 minutes devoted to the offensive linemen and defensive linemen. That's about, like, what, 6-7 guys. Then we'll do linebackers and DBs. And then we'll devote an entire episode to kicker David Marvin, because you guys know how much special teams matters. And in the meantime, guys, if you want to get your feedback in, if you want to be on one of these fan talks, you can send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com, giving me your contact information, your credit card information, date of birth, social security, all that type of stuff. And kidding, again, jokes, bad ones. Just give me your contact information and your availability. If you have a Skype account, give me your username. If you don't, just give me a phone number and that'll be fine. And sort of what your availability is, any sort of topics or discussions that you are itching to have. If not, then I can certainly come up with some, and just send an email and I'll get in touch with you. Your other feedback, and you can do so on Twitter. FalcFans is my handle. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Of course, the Facebook page is Locked On Falcons as well, if you prefer that social media platform. And of course, you can leave a comment at lockedonfalcons.com or falcfans.com, where the show is posted daily. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.